Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. There are those who will tell you that getting old isn't for sissies. The process of aging brings with it certain inevitabilities, some of which are a lot less pleasant than others. Heart disease, dementia, and arthritis are just some of the issues we may have to face, yet who among us wouldn't want to extend our days? The likelihood is greater than ever thanks to modern medicine, so we'll be talking today about what we can do to live longer and better, what the odds are, things we can do when we are younger to help us as we age. Whether you are on the north or south side of middle age, we'll have information that applies to you on today's program. I'm Don Marsh. Our guest in studio is Slew Care geriatrician Dr. John Morley. Nice to have you with us once again.
Great to be back, Don.
Well, the first question I have is we're going to be talking about the aging process. What can you say that will keep the people who are under 40 to stay with us during this program?
Well, first of all, people under 40 most probably have parents who are getting a little older, and in the end, children finish up having to work with their parents as they get older. So that's the first good reason to stay with us. The second is that aging successfully starts at birth, so they should, even if they don't care about themselves, be listening, because there are things that they need to do with children to basically make sure they will age successfully. And sort of very obvious, you don't smoke when you're pregnant. And there's tons of data that now says that if a baby is born small, that baby, by the time they're 70, is going to actually be weak. So if you're 40, you most probably have children who need to be listening to what I'm saying so that they will get it right, so you will help them get it right. And then as you go through life, you have to continue to do things. It's too late when you're 100 to decide that now it's time to age successfully.
Do we really want to live to be 100?
You know, I think we want to live as long as we're engaged in life, we're enjoying life, and it's working for us. And I've got a lot of friends who are in their 90s to 100 who are very happy and really enjoying it. I've got other people who are friends who in their 80s start to say, I'm tired, I've seen enough. And by the time they're in their 90s, it's like, well, no, I'm not engaged anymore. It's that engagement. So teaching yourself to be engaged and to enjoy life and find things that make you happy throughout life makes it worthwhile living a long time.
And more people are. I mean, there are obvious reasons for that, but certainly that population is increasing.
There's no question the population's increasing. We know that in Missouri now we've got the 13th highest number of centenarians in the United States, which is pretty good. We know that basically women now live 7.5 years longer than they lived 50 years ago, and this is going up. We recognize that it's going to go up more, because if you go to a small little place where Princess Grace lived in Europe, Monaco, fundamentally people there now live to a mean of 93 years. And here in the United States, that's women in Monaco, here in the United States, women only make it to 80.7. So there's a 13-year increase that is in our future at some stage if we can get things right and do all the right things.
And yet we've been hearing lately about the increase in heart disease among women, for instance, that it seems fairly unusual, and that women being so many more women in the workplace, that their longevity is shrinking or apt to.
So women's end longevity has not shrunken, neither has the average Americans. If you go back to the beginning of last century, the average American was dead by the age of 50. Half of us were dead before the age of 50. Now, half of women are dead at 80, men are dead at about 75.7 years. That's a huge increase over 100 years. And that was why we became the most obese nation in the world. So, you know, sometimes we hear that all these things are bad, but other things are counterbalancing what's happening. And the quality of life, of medical care, of public health care has been enormously improved. So some of these things, yes, they will shorten our life, but we're talking sometimes about a half a year or 3 months. And really and honestly, we've got to recognize that we're doing much better, and the likelihood is we're going to continue to do much better over the next century.
Why do women live longer than men?
Well, there are many reasons women live longer than men. As a male, I always ask my wife this, and she says, well, know, it's easy. You'll never be able to look after yourself if I died off. So I think one reasonable reason is women are more competent than men. If you look at it, women have two X chromosomes. Us lowly men have an X and a Y. The Y chromosome is much smaller. So there's a piece of the X chromosome that's not protected. So if you get a mutation in that that's bad for you, fundamentally it's going to kill you off because you don't have the other part of that X to try and stop it. In addition to that, men have something called testosterone. You know, this is what makes men more than anything else. Women also have testosterone, but much less. Testosterone tends to make men take more risks. They're more likely to get into fights. They're more likely to use drugs, to basically smoke, to do a variety of things that are not good for their health. So those are sort of starting pieces. And then finally, women are very good at going to see their physician on a regular basis, predominantly because they learn to do this when they're having children and seeing their gynecologist. Men, on the other hand, are physician averse. They don't like to see doctors, and they'll wait forever when they're having chest pain or something else going on. They'll say, yeah, I'm fine. It's just a little thing. And then by the time they come, it may be too late to cure them.
I know one of the things that you point to as being a problem for people as they age is stress. And not having a positive attitude, I think, is one of the ways that you put it. Does this mean that men are under more stress generally than women? Which I would hesitate to say that as a statement, well, but does it mean
well,
that?
Well, I think as a male and having watched my wife deal with my children while basically I was out at work, my wife was under far more stress than I ever was. I think bringing up children may be the largest stressor we all have. Part of it is it's not stress, it's how you cope with stress. So there are many studies, both at the animal level and in humans, showing that if you can cope with stress, if you have a stressor and you know what to do with it, fundamentally, it doesn't get you down. That makes you stronger. In animals, every time you have a stressor, it improves your immune system as long as it doesn't go on too long, as long as you can switch it off internally and stop all those signals that basically wipe out the immune system. So I think the reality is it's stress coping. And I think women, on the whole, perhaps by having children, by going through pregnancy, learn how to cope with stress much more than us guys who, you know, fundamentally are not as good as saying, I've just got to deal with it, and we finish up kicking the dog or the cat or something ridiculous rather than dealing with our stresses.
We had a psychologist on a program once who said that stress is not the problem, it's distress. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes total stress. It's more or less what I'm saying. It's saying that if you have a stressor and you can deal with it, if you can get rid of it, which psychologists can often help people who have difficulties with this doing, then you're okay. It's the continuation of the stress where you can't get rid of it, which would be distress, that makes the real difference.
Right. You know, I want to get our listening audience into this conversation as quickly as we can. I've got a list of many things that I want to talk to you about, but I'm sure that what you're saying will touch a great many people who are listening right now. On our Facebook page today, we asked people, what's the one healthy lifestyle tip that you swear by? And we'll be getting some feedback from that, I'm sure. In fact, we already have. And I'll put that question out to the audience now. Give us a call at 382-8255 if you would like to get into this part of the discussion. What's the healthy lifestyle tip that you would swear by? And come on in and join the conversation with Dr. John Morley. What is the biggest threat to our health as we age?
I think the biggest threats to our health are twofold. One is obviously disease, which comes from a variety of things, including genetics and the environment. But the other one is our lack of maintaining physical fitness. Exercise appears to be overwhelmingly the thing that most keeps us going, people who exercise. So if you're a professional athlete, for instance, a baseball player, they live about 5 years longer than other men will live. If you're a international Olympic star, there was just another study that came out showing that they, too, live quite a bit longer than the general population. So people who are fit and continue to be fit through their life live longer, and they also have less Alzheimer's disease or dementia. So these are two amazingly positive things. The third thing is they function better as they get older. So the bottom line, unfortunately, is exercise, exercise, exercise. Now, for those who don't like exercising out there, you can always do what I call SPIF, which is spontaneous physical fun, which means that when you go to the supermarket, park as far away as you can and walk in. Don't park nearby. When you see a escalator, find the steps and take them up. Here at NPR, they wouldn't let me walk up the steps. Two flights, I mean, gee, they just cost me most probably a half a day of my life, you know.
No, don't blame us. Let's not take it that far. When I mentioned a moment ago that through Facebook we asked about the one healthy lifestyle tip that people swear by. Jonathan says, keep moving. He's right there with you. T.S. writes, always take the stairs, which is...
And I didn't even know that. They are two very bright listeners you've got there.
All right. T.S., I guess you don't want to stop by and visit us here. Here then. Yeah. Okay. I said at the top of the program that getting old isn't for sissies. It can be very difficult, can't it? How do we find our way around the most difficult parts of it?
So I think, you know, getting old obviously has both many positives. We can reflect back on how wonderful our life has been. And some of it is just keeping our mind active and enjoying life, because sometimes physically it's much harder to do some of the things we did as we get older. But I think overwhelmingly we also have to recognize that there are times when we basically have things that need treatment, and they have to be treated. And if we wait too long, we will get into trouble. But in addition to that, when you get old, you've got to be very careful when you choose and go to a physician, because physicians believe their job is to give you a drug of some kind. No matter what kind it is, if you walk in, they don't write you a prescription saying, why don't you do resistance exercise each day? They give you a prescription because they say, well, your blood pressure may be a little high. And 9 times out of 10, that's because you're scared of going to the physician and you've got something called white coat hypertension. You don't need that drug, yet people stay on these forever. So watching out that you don't get on too many drugs. One of the things that clearly is causing problems now is many people on over 5 drugs. And a friend of mine, Stephen Fitzgerald in Australia, sat down with a mathematician, and they actually worked out that when you're over 5 drugs, mathematically, you've got a 25% chance of getting sicker when you get another drug, or a 25% chance of getting better. So you have to be really sure that your drugs are going to work, which means that you've got to have conversations with your physician that your physician isn't going to like, which is, gee whiz, why are you giving me this? Are you sure it's right? I'm going to go and look it up, and I'm going to come back having looked it up. Beautiful, now that we've got the internet, I'm going to come back with a lot of information. Some of it may be nonsense, but you're going to have to explain to me why you're doing this to me, because I want to live, I want to be healthy, and I don't want to take drugs that are not going to help me.
Well, the pharmaceutical industry is very, very adept at getting people to ask about drugs they should be taking as well, that marketing process. When we come back, I have to take a break now. I want to talk about how successful and how good the vitamin industry is. Well, we talked off the air about this. I think folks will be fascinated by what you have to say about vitamins and our need or lack thereof for them. And again, let's get the audience into the conversation at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email if you like at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air. Also reach us through Facebook. And again, our Facebook question of the day is, what's the one healthy lifestyle tip that you swear by? You know, we want to know what you are doing to extend your own longevity with Dr. John Morley, Slough Care Geriatrician. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. As we continue our conversation with Dr. John Morley, Slough Care Geriatrician, we're talking about the aging process and things we can do to make that process a little easier to deal with. We were talking about the pharmaceutical industry earlier and the fact that it's very successful in getting people to try things and getting doctors to try things. But you were saying things before we started today's program about vitamins that I found fascinating. You basically are saying, get rid of them.
Yeah. So I'm really scared of saying this because the vitamin industry is a $27 billion industry in the United States. So if everybody listens to me, we will go over the fiscal cliff and never come back. So please be careful. But there have been great studies recently. The Cochrane Collaboration pulls together all the studies that have been done on different drugs and looks at them. And they pulled together the studies on multivitamins. There were over 120,000 people that had either got a multivitamin or a placebo that they could compare. When they looked at this, it turned out that if you take a multivitamin, particularly one with antioxidants in, that's things like vitamin E, vitamin A, beta carotene, if you take those, your chances of dying, and especially if you're a woman, go up a little bit. It's 0.0001%, a very small amount. But nevertheless, it means that these are not good for you. Now, if you're starving in Africa, taking a vitamin may save you if you've got a vitamin deficiency. But most of us in the United States do not have vitamin deficiency. And as we add vitamins, we actually start to damage the free radical system. Free radicals, which cause damage when they get too high. When they get too low, they are essential for our survival. They are the things that get rid of bacteria, they get rid of viral infections, they kill off cancers. And when we kill those off too much, then we lay ourselves open to getting diseases that may kill us off earlier. So quite honestly, if you live in the United States, you eat fruits and vegetables, I can think of no reason why you should be taking a multivitamin. We may want to discuss, or somebody may want to ask about age-related macular degeneration, which is a slightly different situation where it's being used as a treatment. But if it's not being used as a treatment for a specific condition, there is very little to no reason to
And therefore prescribed if by someone to take
well,
it for a particular.
Prescribed, but multivitamins are prescribed by virtually every doctor you go in. They say, gee, and you should take a multivitamin. I think physicians have to catch up to this new research that came out in June last year and understand that you don't tell somebody to take something just because it looks innocuous.
And you mentioned also that there are some vitamins that people take with some regularity that also block the effectiveness of other prescribed medications they might be taking.
Yeah. So this isn't really a vitamin, but it's calcium. And
calcium.
I think every woman takes calcium and certainly should take some calcium each day to protect against osteoporosis. The recommendations are most probably far too high because the average American woman eats about 600 milligrams of calcium a day, the man about 800. So you need about one or two calcium tablets a day. If you take those calcium tablets together with any other drug, and particularly with things like beta blockers that are used to protect your heart, they are not absorbed, and therefore they do not have an effect. The other thing is you should take your calcium just before you go to bed at night, because when we lie down at night and we are not eating, the calcium comes off the bone, and that basically is the time where we lose most calcium from the bone, most likely to become osteoporotic. So I tell my patients to take, and I'm sorry to advertise, I tell them to take two Tums because they're the only two calcium tablets I've ever found that are digestible by me. The rest tastes so bad at night when they go to sleep, and that's more than enough. And when you're going to sleep, the only other tablet you're liable to be taking when you go to sleep is your sleeping medicine. And as long as you believe the Tums is helping you to sleep, you may not need your sleeping medicine.
But how do you know if you've only had 600 milligrams of calcium a day that you need another 400 to reach what you should
have?
Well,
you know, you can do all of this. You know, the reality is God basically came up with the best foods that for human beings, and there's no question about that. So you can drink enough milk, you can have yogurt, you can work this out and do everything you want to do fundamentally in a diet. But most of us don't want to take too much milk because we think there's too much fat in it. We don't all eat yogurt because lots of Americans don't like yogurt, though yogurt is turning out to be a very healthy food and really worthwhile eating. And we don't eat just before we go to bed at night. That most probably, as you're getting older, is the biggest reason to take some calcium just before you go to bed, because most of us are not going to have a glass of milk just as we go to bed, though a glass of warm milk taken just before you go to bed makes you sleep just as well as some of the sleeping tablets we've got.
If you get your calcium naturally, as you've just described, is that going to interfere with the effectiveness of medication?
Not usually, because we don't usually take our medication with food, and it's mixed in with food, and it's not giving you a glob of what is really brick. I mean, you know, calcium is just sort of like brick or stone that you're taking.
Chalk.
That's sitting there and just pushing everything else out of the way.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. While we're talking about vitamins, Tom in St. Louis has a related question, I believe. Tom, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My brother developed a test that's 100% conclusive for your B12 deficient or not. And I wanted to see if you can comment on B12 deficiency, if it's endemic, and what's the state of the awareness of what to do about it.
Okay. So, Tom, thanks very much. That was a very good question. There are, in fact, about 10 to 12% of older people who are going to be B12 deficient. Some are going to be clearly B12, some not quite clearly. What a physician will do is measure your B12. If it's near the lower level of normal, they'll get a second test. This is called methylmalonic acid. You don't have to remember the name, but you should make sure you get that test to check your B12 deficient. If you're B12 deficient, it's really important to take B12 because lack of B12 makes you not think as well. It causes trouble with your peripheral nerves and making you not be able to walk as well, and it will give you an anemia. So here is an example where you need to take a vitamin because you're deficient in it because you have a genetic deficit usually that becomes more penetrant as we get older.
Thanks for the call. Responding to our Facebook page question, what's the one healthy lifestyle tip you swear by? Jenny writes, eating five times as many veggies as the amount of meat consumed every day.
So, Jenny, you're a genius because the studies done by my good friend Katie Corr in Norfolk, she's out of Cambridge, show that if you eat five helpings of fruit and vegetables a day, you will be 16 years younger at the age of 75 than you would be if you did none of that. So that plus exercise are the two things that really seem to work. And yes, those fruit and veggies, when you're a kid, you need them to grow well. And as you get older, you need them, and we need them throughout our life.
One listener, no sugar, no bread.
You know, there's no. And I think that's a very important thing to realize. We all have these ideas that one thing is bad for us. You can break any rule and have almost anything as long as you have a good balanced diet to start with. So you don't have to be miserable. If you happen to like sugar, sugar in moderation is going to do you no more harm than anything else. So, and I happen to like bread, particularly bread with peanut butter. So occasionally I splurge and have bread and peanut butter. Yeah, bread is not overwhelmingly good, particularly that pure white one. We know that, and you can do what like my wife does and buy the stuff that tastes as if you're eating basically some sort of sawdust. But nevertheless, you know, nothing is absolutely bad for you. Moderation is the answer. And, you know, we hear all these things about this diet is best for you or that diet is best for you. The reality is it's moderation. You want to weight maintain. As you get older, particularly over the age of 60, you can't afford to lose weight. Many, many studies have shown that weight loss over 60 increases your death rate. Bad for you, even if you've got diabetes, which you would think would be good for you. But what you've got to do is do everything in moderation and then make sure you've got a balanced diet, those fruits and vegetables, and perhaps making sure, particularly in the Midwest, that you're getting a fair amount of fish, you know, somewhere between 2 to 4 times a week. You should be having fish as well.
Better than fish oil.
Anything that's natural is better than the non-natural, and I can't say that too many times because, you know, if I was to give this talk about vitamins and say they were bad for you based on epidemiology, I can't show that. In fact, the amount of vitamins you absorb through the food is always good for you. It's only when you go and have a man make those vitamins. Remember, it's always men who think they can make more money out of making things more purified. Women haven't quite got onto that one yet. And so when you do that, fundamentally, that's when you run into trouble. The food and getting as much good food as you can into you is good, but you don't want to put on weight. You also don't want to lose weight as you get older. And you want to be at your perfect weight that you want to be when you're 60. And recent studies have just come out showing that now the ideal weight is a BMI between 26 and 30, no longer the 21 to 26. And a lot of nutritionists have got really angry. They say, we've got an obesity epidemic. How can people be showing this? Well, the answer is we're bigger people. We've got more muscle. We've got more bone. And those count towards. So having a BMI of 26 to 30, particularly if you do some resistance exercise, is really your muscle and bone as much as anything
else. There's a recent study just showing if you're a little bit overweight, you're okay.
You do better than if you're actually normal weight, yes.
I want to go back to the phones. Maybe a quick response to this, John. This is Taylor writing. I'm a vegetarian trying to eat fewer processed foods. It's made a huge difference in my health. Processed foods are an issue.
Yeah. So processed foods are an issue. It's ideal if you can get well-prepared non-processed foods, but they are much more expensive. Remember that if you can stick to the fruit and vegetables, try and stick to less processed where you can, but a balanced diet. I don't want everybody to go out there and say, I've got to get non-processed foods, because for a lot of people, they won't be able to eat a reasonable, balanced diet. That's when you finish up going to McDonald's consistently for your food, because it's the cheapest way to do it. So if you've got enough money, you can afford to do it, that's great. If you don't, think about, is it fruits and vegetables I'm buying, or is it a hamburger and fries? And fries are not really vegetables, kids, I'm sorry.
Let's bring in Jeff calling from St. Louis. Jeff, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, Don. First, my essential health tip, I think I've long held that we've evolved to walk. Our species has evolved to walk, and it's only in recent times that we quit doing that regularly. And my question is, I recently read some research that said that males, when they're young, if they develop good muscle tone, that bodes well later for longevity and health. If the doctor can comment on that, and if there's similar research for girls, and I can listen off the air.
Okay. Yeah. So, yes, there's a lot of data saying that if you build your muscles when you're young, if you walk and exercise, I mentioned earlier that professional athletes live longer and do better as they get older. That's even true for American football players, despite the fact that they get injured and they hurt their joints. They live longer over time. So, yes, build your muscle when you're young. We know that as we get older, we lose muscle. You lose it from the age of 30 at the rate of about 1% per year, which is a lot by the time you're 80. But therefore, if you start with a lot of muscle, you do well. It's the same with bone. If you start with a lot of bone, and bone grows because of exercise as much as good diet and calcium when you're young, so getting your milk when you're young and exercising will give you big bone, get big muscles. Then you start at 30. Now it's downhill from 30 onwards. 28, by the way, for memory. So it's even younger when you start to lose your memory. So basically, recognize, yes, build the stuff early. This is why you've got to work with your kids to make sure they exercise, to make sure they eat a good, healthy diet, because then they will age successfully. And they're all going to be living close to 90 to 100 at this stage if they're born now. So let's start working on them and make them happy.
I hope my daughter's not listening. She's 30 years old today. Little does she know, she's starting on the downhill slide, right?
That's okay, and I hope that you did everything well for her, because otherwise, Dawn, it's your fault if she has a lousy second half of life.
Everything's been my fault. Let's bring in Jerry calling from O'Fallon. Jerry, thanks for being with us, and thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning. I can't escape without quoting what's engraved on the late Ernie Kovacs' tombstone, which is nothing in moderation, but seriously, over the last couple of years, I've had a couple bouts of fighting cancer and gone through various treatments. And I made a promise to myself that whenever I was going to go in the hospital or anything, I would act as if I was checking into a suite at the Ritz-Carlton. And I don't know if having a positive attitude will have any effect on my future prognosis, but I can tell you that it made the process much more pleasurable, for everyone involved, including me, and I guess hopefully the caregivers as well. And I've kind of found that that's pretty much how we approach something, or how we look at things, is pretty much a state of mind. And the best you can do to stay optimistic is, I think, is always going to be the better course. And finally, I always say my intent is to die young as late as possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Those are great points. And I think, we've realized hospitals tended to be fairly austere places, and we're learning more and more. Certainly in the geriatrics group, we're learning that getting people out of bed. I don't think anybody should be allowed to go into a hospital and sit in bed all day. I think you should have to dress, get into clothes and move around. You lose, within 3 days of going to hospital, a kilogram of muscle. That's a huge amount. You're never going to put that back on if you just lie in bed, and that's for people 65 and over. As far as cancer, a number of places have realized that having a nice environment, piping music in, making people feel happy seems to give you much better outcomes. Don't think there's great data, but it certainly, as you say, makes people happier. And at SLU now, we've developed an outpatient bone marrow transplant to keep people out of hospital. Perhaps the worst thing you can do as you get older is get sick enough to go into hospital. If you can manage to get yourself treated at home, you will do really well. Johns Hopkins, in fact, now offers home care for older people, showing that they can do 90% of things that were done in hospital at home and get better outcomes at a much lower cost.
I'm trying to think of who it was, and I want to say Norman Cousins again, but I may be wrong, who had cancer and watched Three Stooges movies every day and felt that laughter was the cure.
So Norman was a very good friend of mine when I lived in Los Angeles, and the only problem with Norman was going to his house for a meal. He had actually had ankylosing spondylitis, which was what was bothering him at the time, which is a painful back thing, and he would get these spasms. So you would be at a meal with Norman, and basically he'd get a spasm. The meal would stop, and Norman was a great raconteur. Everybody would be talking. We'd have a great time. But when he got the spasms, the meal stopped. This was old-fashioned time. Down came a movie screen. Up went the movie projector. Put the reels on, and you would have to watch Three Stooges movies, and he would start laughing, and pain would rapidly dissipate. The problem is I hated Three Stooges movies, so every time I went over to Norman, I would beg him not to have any muscle spasms because I couldn't stand watching the Three Stooges.
You're listening to Dr. John Morley, SLU Care geriatrician. We're talking about the aging process. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. Again, we have lines open, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK, or send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about aging and the aging process. SLU Care geriatrician Dr. John Morley is with me in studio. Let's go right to the phones. We have some folks who have been waiting. Travis is calling from Oakville. Travis, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, you mentioned earlier if you ate plenty of fruits and vegetables, there really wasn't a need for a multivitamin. And I just wanted to ask, what if you don't eat plenty of fruits and vegetables? You know, I don't have the healthiest lifestyle, and, you know, I take a multivitamin just for that reason, basically, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
So, Travis, the answer is that the average American diet, by the time you've got over 1,000 calories a day, which is virtually nothing, even if you're eating a lousy American diet, you're going to have all the vitamins and minerals you need out of that 1,000 calories. And most of us eat about 1,700 to 2,500 or more a day, depending on how our lifestyle is going. So, don't worry that you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables, but I would urge you to try and eat the fruits and vegetables because that's what gives you that little edge as you get older. So doing these things now and getting into the habit of grabbing an apple a day, you know, keeps the doctor away. And remember, we've said doctors are not the ideal people to go to if you can help it. So keep away from them, at least except for your checkup, which you should be doing regularly. But eat something. Eat a banana, which is not always good, but gives you some potassium and stuff. You know, an orange. You can always find fruit and eat it. Have a salad. When you go out, you know, for dinner, always start with a salad and make the salad a big part of your meal rather than the pieces to follow. I've learned in the last 10 years or so to replace my dessert with a salad. It's made a huge difference. I love dessert, but I feel much healthier now that the salad has replaced the dessert.
But, you know, you can get 1,000 calories from a Big Mac just about. And I want to be absolutely clear on this. If people are eating that way, a lot of fast foods, a lot of processed foods, you're saying they still should not mess around with vitamins necessarily.
The data for vitamins was, these were studies done in average Americans, most probably slightly healthier than average, and they showed a worse outcome when people took them. So the answer is, no matter what, You know, these were average Americans living in Iowa, mm-hmm. where I'm sure they were eating a lot of meat and hamburgers and stuff like mm-hmm. that, is one of the big studies that was done. Also studies in other parts of the world. So really and honestly, I think the answer is 1,000 calories will come very close no matter what you manage to eat. Remember, even on a hamburger, there's a little bit of lettuce and tomato. So unless you throw that out so you can have another beef patty, it's most probably reasonable. My wife would argue you should have tofu burgers. I hate them, so I don't think that's the answer.
Well, speaking of tofu, Sheila joins us from St. Louis. Sheila, go ahead. I think you might be a good segue out of that last comment.
Oh, well, I tell you, you know, your life is in jeopardy when you don't have the best lifestyle. And unfortunately, I had a young son who died because he didn't always listen to his mother or the wonderful people like Dr. Raymond Francis, who wrote Never Be Sick Again. He saved his own life when 45 doctors couldn't save his life at Boston University Hospital. So he wrote Never Be Sick Again, and it is with vitamin C in particular. Did you happen to mention Norman Cousins? Did I hear that?
Yes.
Well, Norman Cousins saved his life with vitamin C and laughter. And if you drink vitamin C powder in water all day long, you just have miracles happen. And you do not have to be sick when you follow the true lifestyle, like President Clinton did. He became a vegan. When I became a vegan back in 1975, I saved my life, and I kept myself from having major back surgery. And more people are learning that this lifestyle really reverses aging, illness, and tofu can be so delicious, so much better than anything else. I have recipes that I'll send them in to share with you. It's so easy to make tofu taste.
So, I congratulate you on having created a lifestyle that is most probably as good, if not better, than most people. Tofu, I agree with you, can be phenomenal. When I was in China, I went to a Buddhist restaurant in Beijing, and I had tofu that tasted like beef, tofu that tasted like fish, and I did not even know I was eating tofu. So if you're a really good cook and you know how to deal with tofu, tofu is great, and there's no problem with it. But there's also not that much wrong with meat, despite the fact that many people think, well, we don't need meat. And if you're not getting meat, you need to make sure you get adequate iron, obviously. As far as Norman Cousins, I don't think it was Norman Cousins who saved his life with vitamin C. I knew Norman very well. The person who took a lot of vitamin C was another friend of mine, Linus Pauling, who was the double Nobel Prize winner. And Linus basically, the first time I met him, was in an airport. I picked him up at LA. He'd just come back from China. We decided to go to a meal before, and then we were going to a cocktail party, and he was going to give a talk for us at UCLA. It was to collect money. And during the dinner and the cocktail party, he drank like 4 vodkas, but in between each one, and now he was 83 at the time, in between each one, he swallowed a large amount of vitamin C powder. At the end, I was terrified he wouldn't be able to give the talk. He got up and he gave one of the best talks I've ever heard. He was the most convincing person, all about vitamin C, very convincing. Everybody loved everything he said. What I learned from this is if you take a large amount of vitamin C and you can drink as much as you like and be a brilliant speaker. Linus was a brilliant person who had a really good lifestyle on top of his vitamin C. Whether or not the vitamin C did the things for him, but Linus was still writing papers that I would have been proud and wished I could have ever written at 92, 93. He had great genetics, was a great human being. Vitamin C comes in oranges. Good way to get it is to get it out of oranges. You don't have to go and get the man-made vitamin C. Oranges, God made, God knew what was good for us.
We have a tweet, I guess, from Bob saying, can you comment on the pros and cons of testosterone supplementation for a 60-year-old male?
Okay, so testosterone I've worked with for much of my life. There are places for testosterone supplementation and there are places when it's not there. We know that all of us, our testosterone levels start going down, that magical 30 onwards, 1% per year again. So we start to go down. Many men have an accelerated loss of testosterone in their 40s and 50s. They have very low testosterone. They lose their enthusiasm for sex. They can't get adequate erections, and they notice they're losing more muscle mass than normal. If your testosterone level is truly low and it should be measured as a bioavailable or free testosterone, not as a total testosterone, then you most probably should be treated if you've got symptoms to treat those symptoms. There is an evolving area that suggests in older, frail people who have low testosterone, there may be some advantages of testosterone, but there are also some side effects. We don't have enough studies to say clearly this is good or bad for you. We've got some data out of a study I did with one of my ex-fellows in Hong Kong where we showed that low testosterone accelerates Alzheimer's disease coming on. So there are possibilities that if your testosterone is low, particularly if it's very low, if you've got lousy bone mineral density, or perhaps that you're having sexual problems, you need testosterone. But if you don't fix any of this after a short trial, 3 months is what I do with most of my patients, fundamentally you shouldn't go on the off chance that this may be good for you. Quite clearly, both for testosterone and growth hormone, which people have sometimes taken as they're getting older, you can do just as well if you lift weights. So for the strength, weightlifting is most probably as good. If you're not going to lift weights, I guess testosterone might be the easy way out.
Reading between the lines, are you saying that there is such a thing as male menopause?
Well, menopause is a female thing. It's not the male
thing. You know,
yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, but I once said this at a conference about male menopause existing, and I got so beaten up by the academics that I've been very careful, Don, since.
What I'm going through now. Right?
Something like that. So fundamentally, the answer is there is a decrease that's gradual in men with testosterone, unlike the female menopause where it comes on fairly rapidly. And yes, there are men who have low testosterone, most probably should have it replaced. There are now many women who are getting testosterone replaced, and there is no data I can find to support that, but some good friends of mine do it, and I can never understand why they're doing it, and I think potentially dangerous. We realize that when we give a drug back, particularly when we start to say, well, I'm feeling good, so I take a little bit more, which people do with testosterone, that this can cause side effects, and we don't have enough data to know what the long-term 10-20-year side effects are.
Let's take another call. We'll change the subject by bringing in Ann, who is calling from Edwardsville. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a real simple question. I know that as opposed to exercise, sitting is not a good idea, that you should get exercise as opposed to sitting more often than not. But is there any study or is there any evidence that standing as opposed to sitting has any health benefits in situations where you can either sit or stand, where it's not a choice between standing or exercise, but a choice between sitting and standing? And I can take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
So, Anne, as far as I'm aware, there are no clear studies that show that standing is better than sitting. But clearly, when you stand, you're actually using more of your leg muscles. And so this may help strengthen the leg muscles a little bit. Moving, you know, from sitting to standing is most probably better than doing either one of the two alone. So if you've got a job where you can sit and stand, get up and walk to go and get a file rather than to basically sit and wait for somebody to bring it for you. Those sort of things. Any motion you can do. And, you know, if you're sitting and your job's sitting, you can use your upper muscles by just moving your hands and moving your legs up and down while you're sitting, which may be better for you than just standing. A fidgeting sort of diet may be the best way to go.
Thank you for the call. Let's bring in Nancy now, calling from St. Louis. Nancy, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering if the doctor could comment on the efficacy, if any, of over-the-counter joint supplements such as glucosamine chondroitin. And I'd also like him to comment on something he mentioned regarding Linus Pauling. I'm a big fan of Dr. Pauling as well. And I think he was probably taking a vitamin C powder in between the vodka because he believed in high concentrations of vitamin C, I think up to 3,000 milligrams a day, and that's perhaps why he wasn't drinking OJ and vodka. And if you could comment on that, I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Nancy. So just as far as Linus is concerned, he really believed high vitamin C was good for him. There was no good evidence. And as I say, the evidence now suggests that this might actually be bad for you, but taking the OJ and vodka might have been better. So that's the one piece. And I've forgotten your first question, so I'm hoping Don can help me out here.
Talking about
glucosamine and chondroitin. So there is some data to support the use of glucosamine and chondroitin in people with arthritis. Not overwhelmingly good, not overwhelmingly bad. I tell my patients to take it because I cannot find any really bad effects. And for some people, they swear by it and they say their joints get much better.
By the way, just out of curiosity, did Dr. Pauling call what he was drinking a screwdriver, even though part of it was in powder form?
It was a straight vodka, nothing else added. He didn't like adulterating things from one thing to another.
Even with the vitamin C. All right. Okay, let's bring in Valerie calling from University City. Valerie, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm 55 years old. I take prednisone, 5 to 10 milligrams. 10 milligrams a day for an inflammatory disease, and I've been overweight just about all my life, and I find it hard to lose weight, and also my joints are being affected by the disease, and I think also maybe the prednisone. What would you recommend that I do to have better health coming up, because I'm almost 60, 5 years from 60 years old.
So diseases like this make it much harder for you to be able to do the things that I'm recommending to many people. Having said that, that does not mean you shouldn't try and do as much as you can. Water exercises are particularly good where you're having problems with your joints. People who take prednisone should all be taking relatively high doses of vitamin D because it blocks the conversion in the body of the original vitamin D to the very active form, the 125 vitamin D. So you should be taking vitamin D. And by the way, when I'm talking about vitamins, everybody most probably should be getting out in the sun and eating vitamin D fortified foods, or they need to have their vitamin D measured because it will be low, and most people need some replacement of vitamin D as they get older, many younger. This is particularly true for African Americans because the skin in Africa, which protected them from the sun, still allowed them to make enough vitamin D. When you move to the United States, we don't get as much sunlight, and it gets the average African American into real trouble. In our study in inner city St. Louisans, the average vitamin D level was 12 for the population, and people think of 25 to 30 as being the right level. So this makes a big, big difference. So we have to think about these things, but in your case, I would take vitamin D, try and get as much exercise, do a balanced diet, try and eat some fish because fish or fish oil sometimes helps with some of these unusual autoimmune diseases.
As time begins to wind down, I'll ask you for some fairly quick responses, John, to these issues. Bill wants to know about the possible advantages of green tea.
Well, it turns out that I always thought green tea was the single best thing in the world. I love tea, and I thought this was great. So I decided to write one of my columns for the Post-Dispatch on green tea and how good it was, but I made the mistake of going and researching it. You should never do this. It turns out that coffee is slightly better for you than tea. So what more can I tell you? I still drink green tea. I like it, and I don't really like coffee that much.
St. John's wort.
St. John's wort is about equivalent to the other SSRIs. You can't take it together with the antidepressants. These are things like Paxil, Zoloft that people take. You should never put them together. You can get into trouble. Always tell someone if you're taking it. The studies for mild depression, dysphoria, suggest it does about as well as Zoloft. You know, ideally, if you were taking it for depression, exercise does better than the drugs by itself for mild depression, not severe depression, but mild depression, and having counseling works very well. So counseling and exercise are the first two things you should be trying before you think that you're going to do better with St. John's wort or with any of the drugs that psychiatrists or physicians are going to give you.
And Bill also asks about ginkgo biloba.
So ginkgo...
And we have about 30 seconds. For
beautiful that. Trees in the botanical gardens. You should go see them. And that's most probably where you should stop. All the studies have failed to show that ginkgo does what it should do, which is make us so much better at remembering things.
All right. Well, some of us need that more than others. Final thought you want to leave us with in just a couple of seconds.
Just to remind everybody, it's exercise, eating a balanced diet, 5 helpings of fruit and vegetables a day, don't smoke, and if you're really desperate, 1 glass of alcohol a day may be good for you, and that's the way to age successfully. And I hope you all have a great time out there and continue aging successfully. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Dr. John Morley. Slew Care Geriatrician, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure our audience got a lot of very useful information today, as they always do. Thank you once again, sir. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with educator and economist Dr. Julianne Malveaux about how rights and opportunities for African Americans have improved since the death of Martin Luther King. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.